Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Well, this time on the Ben Jarofsky Show, as I speak, it is Friday, April 5th, 2024. And as I do with all my bonus shows, I always like to tell you what's in the newspaper before we launch into the conversation. And so many times what is in the newspaper has nothing to do with what I'm going to be talking about. And that's the particular case to now. So as my distinguished guests wait, I'm going to say this. The headlines in the paper are all about tonight's March Madness games. And tonight being Friday, the March Madness games are women's basketball. So one for all you political junkies who listen to my show, you're all political nerds, and not all of you follow sports. March Madness is the nickname for the college tournament. I know that seems like people think, oh, Ben, come on, even I know that. Well, I had a guest today who never heard of Caitlin Clark. I'm not going to name names, okay? I said, do you know who Caitlin Clark is? The person said, no, I don't know who Caitlin Clark is. I'm like, not everybody knows this stuff, okay? Just because you know something, people, doesn't mean everybody knows it. Something I go through life telling myself. Because my ignorance about things is staggering. The stuff I don't know. And I admit it. I'm one of the few people in the world who acknowledges my ignorance. And I don't presume that just because I know something inside and out means everybody knows it. So their March Madness is the nickname for the college tournament where men and women play in separate brackets. But people in America have discovered that women play basketball and they're totally, it's growing. Monday's semifinal games, I don't know if they were the semifinals, quarterfinals, I don't know what they were, had the highest rating. The LSU-Iowa game had the highest rating of any basketball game in the last 10 years, I want to say, except for one game. Higher ratings than the NBA finals, ladies and gentlemen. So something's going on. What it is, it's not exactly clear. And but I do know that women's basketball, Caitlin Clark, Juju Watkins, Angel Reese, Paige Buchner, it's kind of caught America's imagination. I'm not quite sure what to make of that, you know, other than as an old man who raised daughters and dragged them to the basketball court at an early age and just infused them with the love for basketball. And now I'm going to do it for my granddaughters. I just love it. So I'm very enthusiastic about tonight's basketball game. And I'm glad that women's basketball is getting the attention it deserves. And all right, without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guest to introduce himself. And then we will not have a conversation about basketball. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Charles Henderson. I'm from Chicago, Illinois. I'm a veteran and glad to be on the show.
Yes, he is a veteran. And Charles, welcome to the show. Charles and I have had several conversations, pre-show prep conversations, to talk about what we want to talk about. Let's see if we stick to that. I don't know if we, I very rarely do with guests. But before I do, I want to give a shout out to Denali, Denali Dasgupta. Everybody knows who Denali is. She's a regular on the Ben Jarofsky Show, one of the smartest political observers in the city of Chicago, in my humble opinion, dear friend of the show. And it was Denali who said, hey, Ben, got to have Charles come on your show. This guy really knows veterans issues. He's views the world as vets see the world. He's someone you should know. And that's what Denali said. And so I do whatever Denali says. And guess who? Here we are. Charles is on the show. I don't do anything that Denali says, just most things. So vets are in the news right now. In this way, a local news in Chicago, Charles, I've been obsessively talking and thinking about the city council trying to punish Byron Sixto Lopez for having been at a rally where an American flag had been burned. It was a rally protesting Israel's slaughtering of Palestinians, the carnage against Palestinians in Gaza. The actual burning of the flag occurred before Byron Sixto Lopez showed up. He did not burn the flag. And yet the people in this city who despise Byron Sixto Lopez, who is a lefty, and more probably more to the point, really want to defeat Brandon Johnson because he's not their pawn, have used it against Byron. They want to essentially embarrass the mayor. So that's, ladies and gentlemen, that's the political game that's going on. Don't be dumb, Chicago. Just for once in your life, understand the larger chess game that's going on and don't get caught up in these things. But we have had a discussion, Charles, about the flag, about burning the flag, about First Amendment. And everybody always goes, it's okay that the flag was burned because it was burned by a vet. Which is like, I pause and think about that. It's like, is only vets allowed to burn the flag now? Is that the thing? So there's a lot going on here as America tries to figure out like what the flag symbolizes, what burning the flag symbolizes, what it means to be a vet, et cetera, and so forth. So this is sort of the context with which I'm surrounding this conversation we're about to have. So before we go and take a dive into all those issues I raised, which we'll all get to, wanted to explain to folks how it is that you, Charles, joined the military. When did you join the military, and what like prompted you to do so? Tell a little bit about yourself. Go ahead.
Well, I kind of joined the military. I was in college for a couple years, and obviously, I was going to a private university, and didn't really do too well. And at that time, my life was, you know, it was just, you know, I wasn't really focused on school at the time that much. And you know, going to private college is expensive. So that's so I was like, okay, let me join the service. You know, I mean, I thought at that time it was a kind of a good idea. You know, I think I was more like, you know, doing it for the college money. That's what I think most veterans were doing it for. I mean, they can say patriotism and all that stuff, but really it's about economically. I mean, that's most veterans, you know, Black, white, Hispanic, Native American. That's why they mostly do it. And I would even say probably like 80% do it because of that, you know, especially at that time too, you know, when the economy was, you know, it was hard. It was hard. Wait, to get.
What year did you join?
I joined in 2003.
So, okay. So let's just position this, ladies. So 2003, that was 2 years after 9/11,
mm-hmm.
After the United States, it was attacked. Did that play a role in you joining the Army? Did you feel like that you had a patriotic duty or responsibility?
Not for me. Everybody's different. Every veteran's different. For me, it was more about the college money. I became more joining overtime. I became more patriotic, like kind of maybe like, you know, brainwashed or something like that. That's over time. And that's, like I said before, I think that the majority of people that join the military is because of economic reasons. And, you know, there's some people that join for patriotic, but it's really for economic reasons, especially in the cities, you know, and small town America, you know, where, you know, people live in, you know, they need to, they want to do better for their life. And that's one way they see it, you know, and especially at that time.
So when you joined, just think about this, Charles, when you joined, it was 2003. The United States was fighting wars on two fronts, Afghanistan and Iraq. Just for the record, just so you know, I was against both wars. Charles, don't get mad at me. I was against the war. I was against the war in Afghanistan. All right. I thought that was whatever. It doesn't matter. But the point is, the United States was on two fronts. So if I were your father, I would have said, son, what are you doing? This is the worst time to join the army is when there's a war. But, oh, my God, when there's two wars and they need everybody they can, don't do it. That's what the advice I would have given to you. Did anybody give you
That's a very good question. I don't think my mom was too happy about it. You know, I think overall my family wasn't happy about it. I think most of them at that time were against, at least I know, against what was going on in Iraq. I think maybe because we're not really a military family, but the people that we've had that joined, the couple people that we had, they've came out from the military, and their experience from that going into civilian life was really rough on them, especially someone like my mom's brother who went during peacetime in the 80s, early 80s. But, you know, coming out of that transition, he had a hard time too. So that's kind of maybe why our family looked down on that aspect. You know, my uncle, he was on a DMZ, and back then they actually used to, you know, they used to shoot at each other, you know, fire at each other back in the early 80s. So that's what he told me. But I think with my uncles, I think he kind of eased my family, you know, into saying maybe this is good for him, you know, sort of. But I he was very wary too, you know, about it. So it's not like he was like gung-ho, like, I want you to go, you know. So
let me ask you this, and this is like a hypothetical, I understand. Let's say I was your Uncle Ben, and I said to you, Charles, what are you doing? Don't go into the army. Would you have listened to me? Or would
I'll be honest with you, Ben. I'll be honest with you. Another thing, I was curious. You know, I was like, you know, you see these commercials on TV, you see this, and you're like, man, I'm missing the action. I'm young. You know, I ain't doing anything over here. I mean, I was going to school, and I really like history and all that stuff. But I was like, man, I want to be part of history. That's the way I thought, you know, at that time. And that's not what I think now, obviously. You know, I would never let my kids or anybody, you know, join the military, you know, at all. But, you know, that's what I thought. It was more of an adventure. And I think for a lot of people, you know, it's like, and then you got to remember, Ben, people forget about this too. It's what, 2020, what, Iraq, 2003?
Yeah.
Dean, what was Person of the Year? Person of the Year, Time Magazine, was it? The soldier, right? Yeah. Now they don't even talk about us, you know? Like, even last year when they had the 20-year anniversary of Iraq, they barely even had documentaries.
They don't want to know.
Yeah, so it's like we've totally been forgotten, you know?
No, I know. They don't want to know. They don't want to know.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
And then it's funny because I think that just the government's so embarrassed by their mistakes, you know, of how they handled it. And then they did a poll, I think, about 3 years ago that I remember. I think it was, I forgot what it was, it was one of the newspapers. And they asked veterans, like, how did you feel about the war? And most of them said it wasn't worth it. Like, it was like 70%. Yeah. So there you go.
Well, no, that's, I'll read you a poem. And I wasn't prepared to do this. Okay. To this point, and it's by Rudyard Kipling. Now, a lot of people go, Ben, Rudyard Kipling's a racist. Why are you reading his poem? I go, yes, he is a racist, but this poem speaks to what Charles was just getting at. And the name of the poem is Tommy. All right. And I can't do this justice, Charles, because it's sort of written like with a Cockney accent. So Tommy is a Cockney, a British person, a lower class British person. Okay. So I will do my best, and I humbly apologize to all the poetry lovers out there who gotta recognize I'm butchering Rudyard Kipling's poem. But here it goes. I went into a public house to get a pint of beer. The publican up and says, "We serve no redcoats here." The girl behind the bar, they laughed and giggled fit to die. I ousted into the street again, into myself, says I, "Oh, it's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy go away. But it's thank you, Mr. Atkins, when the big band begins to play. The band begins to play, my boys, the band begins to play. Oh, it's thank you, Mr. Atkins, when the band begins to play." And what he's getting at is when country's feeling patriotic and they want to pump themselves up and get more people to join the machine, it's like, thank you for your service. But when you're down and out and you're done with your service, it's get the hell out of the bar. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Well, absolutely. And, that's a great, I love it. It's very true, you know?
Yeah. Tommy, man, by Rudyard Kipling. I don't think any military recruiter in the history of the military has ever read Tommy to a potential recruit. So, all right. So did you also have this notion, how old were you in 2003?
I was 21. So I went in a little, you know, but you know what was crazy, Ben, about my these whole wars? There were people of all ages. You know, there was, because, you know, like the economy. I mean, we had people, I think they raised the age in the Army to 43. We had a guy that was in my unit. He joined when he was 40 because God bless his soul, he just died last year, you know, for some circumstances. We used to call him Grandpa, and he lost his job. He was a computer person then. I remember then he was working at a Pizza Hut, and he just had enough. And then he joined, and he was 40 years old. So we had people all ages, you know, mostly, but they were mostly around range from 18 to 20, you know, 23, but there was people that were older going in, you know?
Whoa. So what I was going to get at, was it part of the physical challenge of the Army that kind of draw you in? Like, I want to show that I want to get in physical shape. I want to prove that I can, you know, go through all the rigors of the training. Did that sort of draw you in as well, or no?
No, not really. Maybe more of the traveling. Too, you know, that's why I was like, damn, I'm like, man, I can go to this place, I could go to that place, but I wasn't thinking that, you know, that we're getting, you know, getting deployed and stuff. And, you know, people got to forget that my generation, because I still go to the VA, I go do my therapy and everything, and I was just talking to my therapist from the ages from 45 to, I would say, from people from 35, people from 1979 to 1990, that generation, we were the most deployed ever. Not World War II, not Vietnam, it was over and over and over. It was like, you know, because obviously we don't have a draft. We went on so many deployments. It was insane.
So since you mentioned that, let me throw you my theory. I mean, we'll get back to your story.
Yeah.
So I'm considerably older than you. When I was in high school, I was ticking toward 18. The draft was a reality. And I'd be like, I was chicken. I won't lie to you, Charles. I did not want to go to get sent to Vietnam. I'm just, yeah, Tell it like it is, Charles. I'm not going to make up something. And so I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And my mom was like, you're going to college. That's where you're going to go. And you're going to avoid it. But I wasn't the smartest kid in the world either. So I had that working. Some college would accept me. But the draft ended right before my moment came. And okay. It ended because there was so much resistance to the draft by middle class people who didn't want to go, or upper class people who didn't want to go into the army and go to Vietnam. And so the powers that be that run the government, the officials, learned a lesson from Vietnam. And the lesson is you cannot wage war anymore across the world. You cannot be an imperialist army with a draft, because there'll be too much resistance on the home front. We could do it only with a volunteer army.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have went to the volunteer army. That's where we are now. I'm starting to think we should go back to a draft, because I believe if we had a draft in 2001, there would not have been a two-front war, because there would have been so much resistance. All the resistance we had in 2003 against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan would have been even greater had there been a draft. That's the Ben theory. I would love to hear your response and your thoughts on that theory. Feel free to disagree with me if you want. Go ahead.
Well, I never thought about that. That's actually a pretty interesting theory that you have right there, that if we had a draft, more people would resist. Would have that worked? I don't know. That's something that would have been something to see, but probably not. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe. But I never thought of it that way. I mean, even though without the draft, though, it is what they call it's the backdoor draft. You know what I'm saying? Even though we don't have a draft, let's just get all the lower class people and stuff. You know, and people that are, you know, I mean. Even we had people that were like having trouble with the law would join too. So it's like, let's get those people. So it's always it's called a backdoor draft. Let's just get the poor people to fight. And I'm in a book by a Swedish journalist when he interviewed me, and you know, in my deployment to Afghanistan, and I quote, you know, from Born on the 4th of July. They always said the poor people to fight, you know, the wars, you know, so. Which I like, Born on the 4th of July.
That, Ron Kovic.
Yeah, kind of. That's kind of my story, but not the middle class part. But you know,
Ron Kovic was middle class guy. Folks, either read the book or watch the movie. There's a movie, a Ron Kovic movie as well, Born on the 4th of July. All right, so let's go back to your story. So you were sent to Afghanistan. Is that correct?
Yeah, I went to Afghanistan. Yeah, so that was let's just say it's war. You know what I'm saying? So, and
how long were you there?
I was there 11 months. Well,
and so, when you for finally your time was up, did you reenlist, or did you? That's it. You
went that home? That was the end of my. That was the end of my career right there. So by the time of my deployment, my last deployment, I was done. You know, I knew I was getting out. I knew that I didn't believe what I was doing anymore. But I had to put a good front for the people that were under me. You know what I'm saying? The younger guys. You know, but I knew that I was done. I was like, this is a waste of time here. I mean, people have no idea like how much money we spent there. Like just like on stuff that like was thrown out. I mean, people complain about, you know, about migrants and all that stuff. And people have no idea how the military industry, complex, mm-hmm. how much they charge, you know, taxpayers. It's really amazing and stuff. And it was just, yeah, I was pretty much done. You know what I mean? On my last tour, we came back in March of 2010. I was out by Christmas Eve. But technically, technically still in January of 2011. I just went on emergency leave, but I was done.
Wait, so time out. You you were in the Army from 2003 to 2010?
Yeah.
7 years.
Yeah.
And excuse my ignorance for how it works, and I apologize, but didn't you have to, does that mean you re-enlisted?
I was in other places too. I was in Korea, you know, I was in other places too. I was stationed, you know.
So when they said, okay, you can go home and leave, or you can re-enlist and stay longer. Why did you re-enlist? Go ahead.
Because back then the economy was bad. It really was. And what the military was doing, even when I was getting out too, what they'll do is they'll tell you, like the higher ups, like the commander, the sergeant, you know, they'll say, hey, don't you know, there's no jobs out there right now. You know, you don't know what's going to happen if you get out and such and such, you know? So then you start thinking, man, like, hey, you know, like maybe this is not like, you know, maybe I should stay in for another 4 years. Because, you know, the economy sucks. And then, you know, especially we had that crash in 2008, you know, and it's just like, well, this is better than, you know, at least I'm getting food and a check, you know, and why would I deal with waiting in the line for unemployment, you know, and all that. So especially the younger guys, they would and women, you know, troops, they would say that. So, you know. But the turnaround, most people get out in 4 years too. You know, they do the 4 years and they just want to do something in their life, something different. But that's how they kept people in, to say, look, like you go out there, it's not going to work out. Even when I was getting out in 2010, they have like, I forgot what's it called. You know, I've been out so long now. They give you like, you know, it's like an orientation thing, you know, you're like 6 months before you get out and you like, you know, you get a social security card, they help you on your resume, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But people ain't paying attention. You know, like the soldiers ain't paying attention. They just want to get out. They're done with the military. Like they're done taking orders. And I remember this, you know, we had a former military person. She was sitting there. She's like, oh, you won't get no government job, nothing. It took me years. Like, you know, like, they're even being negative, you know, with the prep to get out. So yeah, it's like it took 8 years. I had to be a car salesman, and then that's how they get some people. And I remember the reaction to a couple of people. They're like, "Oh, I'm gonna re-enlist again," you know.
So. They scare you with the real world outside of the military bubble.
Yeah.
So anytime during that period when you were in there, were you ever one of the soldiers who came home to Chicago or flew into O'Hare to see family or what have you, and walked through the airport in your uniform?
I did that for basic training with my mom. You know what I'm saying? And I did that like once or twice and stuff, you know, a couple of times. I never really came back home when I was gone for, like, that's why I always considered my 20s. I was gone all my 20s. I was in the military life, you know. The military took my youth, you know. So I mean, I had fun too. I mean, there was ups and downs too. I mean, I had some fun too. And you know, I consider the people that I serve with as my family, and they are my family. That's the way how I always think. I know they'll do anything for me besides even political. They'll take a baseball bat to someone's head, you know, for me. I know they'll do it, you know. It's kind of a different bond that we have, because in the military, you don't just work with the person. You actually like live with the person too. You know, you live with these people in the barracks and everything. So you work with them 8 hours a day and then you live with them. So it's kind of different. You know, it's not like you just go home to your apartment. You're doing everything. And in the military too, it's 24 hours. You're getting paid 24 hours. So if your sergeant or your commander wants you to come in, you got to come in, you know, if some incident happened.
First of all, just so he said, he gave his youth to the Army. Ladies and gentlemen, this man is a lot younger than I am. So his youth is still with him. All right. I'll just say that. Because if you gave your youth, that means I'm ancient. All right. Very much a young man still, in my humble opinion. All right. So what I was leading up to with that question, did when you walked through an airport, okay, not Chicago, any airport.
Yeah.
Walk it through. Did you people come up to you and say thank you for your service?
More like in the like military states, like North Carolina, Georgia, like Texas, those kind of states. Chicago, once in a while, they'll say thank you for your service, you know, here and there, but not really, you know. I remember one time my mom took me to Oak Brook Mall. This was like Christmas of I forgot what year, and one of the kids is like, "Look, mom, look, it's a soldier." And she's like, she just like walked away. She's like, don't pay him any attention, you know? So, but you know, you got, I was explaining to a friend of mine who does a lot of, what do you call it? He does a lot of veterans, organizing and he's really involved. He's really a great guy. I'll talk about him some other time. But I told him, I was like, you got to understand that like Chicago, Illinois, it's not a military state. Yes, we have Great Lakes, but that's really a training center. Chicagoland area, Chicago particularly, it's a cop, teacher, you know, fireman. So they have no, they don't relate to military personnel. You know what I'm saying? And he's like, you're right, Charles. I'm like, that's what you got to understand. Now, if we were like in North Carolina, we are the gods. You know, we are everything there. So
that is a great point. I had never thought of that till you just said that. Chicago, the dominant cultures in terms of occupations in the city of Chicago, in the imagination of the people of the city of Chicago, are cops, teachers, and firefighters. Right now, the city of Chicago is doing everything it can, this is me speaking, not Charles, to turn people in Chicago against teachers because they don't like the Chicago Teachers Union. This has been a campaign that's been going on for quite a while, and many people in the city of Chicago have fallen for it. They've been brainwashed by this campaign. Again, me talking, not Charles. But they haven't I don't think they've totally succeeded. On the North Side, they've turned a lot of North Side parents against teachers, but they haven't totally, completely succeeded on that front. But you're right. So many people in Chicago, cops, teachers, firefighters, and the military presence isn't as strong. All right. So when you went to North Carolina, they would say thank you for your service.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're loved over there. I mean, those places, if you're going against a veteran, any Democrat, Republican, and if you're like not doing anything for, if they find out anything about, you know, you did this to veterans or funding, or you're not getting voted in, man. You know, it's like,
well, let me get political with you and I'll challenge you on that point.
Maybe. Well,
okay. I'm gonna challenge you. Here's my challenge and get your response. A former president the United States has, his name was Donald John Trump, and he never served in the military. In fact, he had opportunity to serve in the military, but like me, he didn't want to serve in the military. Unlike me, he pretended he did, but he had something wrong with his foot, I think. Don't quote me, Charles, but I think it was his foot that kept him out of the draft. Okay, so he didn't serve. He mocked John McCain, the senator from
Arizona.
He said, "Oh well, he was captured. He was a prisoner of war. He's not a real hero." I'm just telling you what he said, Charles. They mocked. If you recall, the soldier who was a Muslim who was killed and his parents spoke at the Democratic convention, Trump mocked them.
Yeah.
So I believe that Donald Trump mocks veterans, mocks people who serve, mocks people who gave the ultimate sacrifice for our country. And he seems to be supported by lovers of the military, including many veterans. So I just struggle with this. Why is it that Donald Trump can give a middle finger to John McCain in his service and still not pay a price for it in terms of public support from people who say they love the military? Go.
Well, let me backtrack that. I mean, I don't, when I talk about like supporting veterans, like, you know, you won't get, I mean, locally, like local politics. I'm not talking about national. I'm talking about like local politics that I remember, like in North Carolina, South Carolina, you know, like talking about city council and stuff like that. For Donald Trump, oh my God, that guy. I don't even like talking about that guy, you know, to be honest. It's like people are so, you know, it's like enough. I got better things in my life. But he loves it. He loves to be talked about, that bad or good. He's a narcissist. He loves to be talked about. And I'm just like, when people talk about him, I'm like, I got other things. I don't want to be worried about that guy. I don't care about that guy. Let's just vote and get, you know, and I'll go vote, and that's my vote to be, you know, my vote is, will be not for him. But I just think that, I don't know. I have no idea. I think they just like Donald Trump because he just talks shit. You know, he's a white guy that talks shit, and people love that shit. Either way, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, they just like him because he talks shit. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? He's a little kid that is on Twitter all the time, with not the weird world. I call social media not the weird world because it's not the weird world, you know, and that's why people like him. And maybe that's why the veteran community like him too. The veteran community, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to come to your show, because it's not like it's very different. It's like we're all sides of politics. You know what I'm saying? And people got to get this notion that all veterans are conservative, which is not the case at all. You know, there is quite an amount of veterans that are progressive and liberal. But as for Donald Trump and why people vote for him and veterans and he never served, I have no idea. But I know there's people that veterans that make fun of him too, that, you know, I mean, I just have no idea. I just think people like him because he just talks crap.
I think you hit it on the head. He's a white guy who talks shit.
He talks shit.
And so he can talk shit about anybody. That's why I say, just be careful. Don't, not talking to you, just in general.
Yeah.
The universal notion that you cannot disrespect a serviceman only applies to certain people. Donald Trump's free to disrespect servicemen. So I'm just saying, America, look in the mirror. Why can Donald Trump get away with disrespecting servicemen? And some lefty
you make an excellent point. And you know, I mean, no matter what, John McCain's politics or whatever, I was disgusted by it. There's veterans that were disgusted by it too. You know, I mean, it also depends where you're from too. And if, you know, I mean, I think even like the veteran community and I in general, they really, it depends where you come from and your background too. So, but I don't think they even care. Like, you know, for you know, if they disrespected John McCain, because no matter what, John McCain, he's a POW. You know what I mean? And it's like, he's a POW, and you got to respect him for that. Instead of a guy that never even served, my friend calls him a draft dodger, just like Baby Bush, you know, didn't even... Who knows about his National Guard, you know, and he was so gung-ho. And I just have no idea. I just think it doesn't matter. I think they just like Donald Trump, and they just look away from him talking shit about McCain, and they just like him because they see him as this tough guy, this talking shit guy. And really, the real tough guy was fucking John McCain. You know what I'm saying? That's it. But...
I hear you, and that's why I push back what you said about the diversity of servicemen. So this is a story I've told a few times on the mic. I'm going to tell it again. It's not servicemen, it's cops. And so I moved to Chicago in 81. I was very ignorant about the city of Chicago, didn't understand it. I was very much process of learning what Chicago was really all about, Charles. I noticed when Harold Washington was the Democratic nominee to become mayor of the city of Chicago, that there was immediate resistance from the police department. Okay. So to set that up, that's the setup. So here I'm a rookie in Chicago. Don't know anything about Chicago. Don't know, you know, baby. And so I'm talking to this gentleman, a black man, at City Hall. We're just chatting. And this is right at the time that Harold was running for election. Heated election against a Republican named Bernie Epton. And the police department, the rank and file, made it clear they were very pro-Bernie Epton. And it was very much like, this city is going to go to hell with Harold Washington. Gets elected. It won't be safe on the streets of Chicago for your mother or your sister. Charles, that's what they were putting out there. Okay. All right. So this is what, this was, you were 1 year old. So you didn't, you were protected from this, even though you lived in Chicago.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to this guy at City Hall, this black man. And, we're chatting. I go, so what do you do? And he goes, well, I'm a Chicago police officer. I go, oh, well, you must be for Bernie Epton then, because police officers are Bernie Epton. The man looked at me. I can still see the look.
Yeah. Like,
fucking idiot. No, I'm for Harold Washington. And I go, but you're a police officer. And he looked at me. He goes, those are the white police officers. The black police officers, I'm telling you right now, are all for Harold Washington. To which I, ignorant guy, said, how could you both be a police officer policing in the city of Chicago, confronting the same, quote unquote, dangers, and one guy be for Harold Washington and the other guy be for Bernie Epton? He goes, that's what it means to be a black man in the city of Chicago. And I guarantee you, Charles, when they go, all servicemen are for Donald Trump, they're not talking about the black servicemen. I guarantee you that. Your thoughts on what I just said?
You know, like, talking about that too, talking about Harold Washington, because, you know, he's my guy. Okay. I love that man. He's the best. And talking about that, you got to, people will forget. And when I tell people this, they're like, really? I didn't know. Harold Washington was a World War II veteran. People always forget about this. And let me tell you, he was loved. He was loved by veterans. And this was a Vietnam veteran who was a guy from Vietnam Veterans Against the War. He was a spokesman for California. He told me, because he campaigned for him, he said he was loved by conservative and liberal veterans. They loved him. You know what I'm saying? Because he did a lot more for veterans than the dailies ever did. You know what I'm saying? And, like, they never did anything, but they, for some imaginary reason, are Chicagoans, conservative Chicago, they believe that the dailies did everything. But that's another story. But
the different worldviews,
yes,
of veterans and police officers based on what they bring to the table when they join the service, what they brought to the table when they join the police department, if they come from the black community or they come from the white community. And that's why that was that moment when ding, the light went on for young Benny Jarofsky. Oh my God. You, yeah. There's more to it than just being a serviceman or a cop. And so whatever, to this day, all the servicemen are for Trump. I'm going, well, when we ask the black guys,
not really,
you know, and, yeah. Harold was the mayor. I'm just going to update it. Brandon Johnson's administration just gave police officers a raise. I'm just saying that, police officers of Chicago, you got a raise from Brandon Johnson. You didn't get the raise from Lori Lightfoot. You didn't get the raise from, what was the one before her? Oh yeah, Rahm Emanuel and Daley. You got a raise right out of the bat from Brandon Johnson. I don't see any love coming from the police department for Brandon Johnson, Charles, on that point. I'm just saying, okay? I just see resistance from the union. I'm just pointing out an obvious thing. All right. Let's get now to the issue of the flag burning. When you heard that there had been a flag burning before this particular protest, this particular rally, were you, as a veteran, offended by that?
I wasn't offended. Obviously, I to get back a little bit, you know, I when I got out of service, I joined a veterans organization called Iraq Veterans Against the War. So, you know, I'm anti-war. I'm, you know, I've been part of the anti-war movement since 2010. And so, no, I wasn't upset about the veteran burning the flag. I wasn't. You know, that's what he wanted to express himself. Now, would I have done that way? I wouldn't have done it that way for strategical reasons. That's why. And I talked to other veterans. I talked to other liberal veterans and progressive veterans and liberal veterans. And most of them kind of said the same thing that I said, that I wouldn't have done that way. I know at my time in my organization, that's something that we didn't like, if you burn the flag, because it gives you too much heat. It gives you, you know, and then it's not really focused on the real issue what you're trying to do and stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, this other veteran, you'll probably go to the next question that I talked to. His vision is different, you know.
Wasn't my next question, but what the heck? Since you're not only answering the questions but asking them, I'll ask that question.
I'm trying to be like journalism, Ben. It would work with him,
So that veteran that you talked to that I have not talked to,
yes.
And wait, hold on, I'm getting it right here. His name is Zachary Cam, yes. And that was a gentleman that burned the flag. I would like to bring him on the show and hear his thoughts, but okay. Since you had a long conversation with him, what was his logic and rationale, and did that impact your worldview on it? So go ahead.
I got a hold of him. I talked to him for a couple hours, you know, and I think he was really like, I know he's been interviewed from, you know, other, you know, news outlets, but I think he trusted me a lot, and he went way more into detail with me because he's part of the organization I used to be. It's just called different. It's called About Face. But he's really, the thing about him is he's really, really new to community stuff, you know, joining organizations. He's really, really new. I can give you a background on him if you want a little bit. He's a young man. He's 33. What I thought was pretty interesting, he's from Southern California. He was in the Marine Corps. He joined right out of high school. I think he joined when he was 19. He was in the Marine Corps from 2010 to 2014. He did two tours in Afghanistan, 2011 to 2000, and then one in 2013. He got out in 14. And I thought what really hit me, he went to college for journalism. Now, I don't know if he graduated or anything, but I know he told me he went for journalism, which I thought was pretty interesting. His job, actually, what he did in Afghanistan was actually he was route clearing, for IEDs. So in the Marine Corps, they're hardcore. They don't care. It's not like, you know, I love the Army too, but the Marine Corps, you're going out there without a vehicle.
Wow.
But yeah, he was doing that. He was a combat engineer, so that makes sense that he would be doing that. He doesn't drive anymore, which I don't either. I do. I have PTSD, and he told me he has PTSD. He didn't use the VA. He did ketamine therapy for clinical trials, which I thought was pretty interesting. And then what was interesting is that he's told me that he wanted to do this activism for a long time, but he just never came around it. So he moved to Chicago just 2 years ago, and he fell in love with Chicago because he's like California and Southern California, by the way, which I almost was going to move to San Diego when I got out myself. He says that you don't need a car, you know, when he went to visit his friend here that lives in the suburbs, he's like the airport, you have the train and everything. He said he fell in love with the city, and his wife actually has an office here, her job, you know, so they, you know, she could get transferred over here. And so then, but let me back forward. He went to school, you know, he got certified with, some kind of bakery veteran program. It was a five-month business program. And then I'm looking at my notes. I'm sorry. Okay. So what really got him into these organizations is that he joined, which I never even heard of the Socialist Rifle Association. So he, yes, that it's a like kind of a what would I say? An anti, against NRA. So he joined them, which was, I've never heard of them, which was, I was like, okay, you know, I guess he's a younger generation. So he found them online.
Yeah.
Obviously. So then through that association, he met up with a group that he's part of now called the Party of Socialism and Liberalism or something like that.
Okay.
So this is an organization he's part of now. In that organization, they asked them to speak. So this was in January of this past year. So they asked him to speak. He spoke at this event. That's when he said, he told the crowd, I'm going to burn their American flag. Now, this flag that he got was the flag that he got, the American flag in Afghanistan. Because in Afghanistan, each soldier is allowed for one day, if you request it, for their family or forever, they put the flag up for you, you know, that they have. It's an official flag. So he went, he talked at that rally. He said he was going to burn the flag. He said he was going to do what he was going to do because that's what he learned from the Marine Corps, you know, like gung-ho. And so then he was going to do it a week after that veteran that burned himself to death, Aaron Bushwell. He wanted to do the 1 week anniversary that he was going to burn his flag. But he said, quote, that when he was going to do it, the conditions were bad and he didn't want people to get hurt. So he didn't do it that day. Then he went when he burned that flag. I don't know. I think I have the 22nd. That when he burned, so he was asked by behind enemy lines if he wanted to come to the rally, and he was only in contact with, I mean, he was asked by one person. He said sure, and he decided to burn the flag, and that's what he did. And he decided to burn the flag. He said that he got the night before, he soaked it in lighter fluid and soaked the flag in lighter fluid and just burned it. Now I asked him about Byron, that whole situation.
Uh-huh.
The next question. Okay.
Yeah.
So I was very curious about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
So he said that he didn't know who the hell Byron is, right? I mean, nobody knows who their alderman is anyways, most Chicagoans, especially guys from Southern California. He didn't know.
Yeah.
I asked him, I was like, was Byron there before? He said he doesn't know.
Yeah.
But he said his friend, who is part of another organization about face, had it all, he videoed, you know, and he said that Byron wasn't there.
Yeah.
And he said, quote, if Byron did know that there was a flag burning, Byron wouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
That's it. So that's quote from this Marine.
So Byron was on the show yesterday, so Thursday. I urge everybody, you want to check out what Byron had to say. Byron Sixto Lopez, alderman of the 25th Ward. And in contrast, Charles, to you and Zachary, I must make a confession. I know not only know who my alderman is, I know every alderman in the city of Chicago. I'm a political junkie. I apologize for this. If this was an AA meeting, it would be political junkie meeting. I go, my name is Ben Jarofsky, and I'm a political junkie.
Well, you have to. this is your basis. You're supposed to know every alderman.
Thank you for that absolution. I appreciate that. So don't worry. I know enough for you, Zach, and everybody else out there. Okay? Denali, I know enough for all of you. All right?
Denali knows everybody.
I know who the aldermen are. And listen, man, I've said this all week. That was, I will repeat myself, that was an attempt to embarrass ultimately Brandon Johnson. This is not about Gaza. This is not about burning the flag. This is not about loving veterans. This is not about patriotism. This is about beating Brandon Johnson. There was another alderman at that rally. Well, folks don't know about this. David Moore was at that rally. I don't see anybody introducing any legislation.
Really? I didn't know that. Okay, yeah. Then see?
So why? Because they couldn't link it. David Moore is more independent of Brandon Johnson. So wake up, Chicago. So he was elected in 2023. The moment he was elected as a lefty supported by the Chicago Teachers Union, the forces of opposition were already gearing up to vote him out of office. It's a fact. It's a reality. We've seen it. The warm-up was the state's attorney's race, where they successfully defeated the candidate that had been endorsed by Kim Fox. And they're trying to figure out the issues that will prevail in Chicago. They've come to the conclusion that you have to have a candidate who is absolutely a supporter of abortion rights. That's probably why Paul Vallis lost the lakefront, or didn't win more of the lakefront than he got in the last race. So they're not going to make that mistake again, Charles. But this is me speaking, not you.
Yeah. I
absolutely believe that was phony love and reverence for the flag. I don't believe that was motivated by real, genuine love for the flag. I believe that was motivated by hatred for Byron Sixto Lopez and an opportunity to knock Brandon Johnson out.
Well, I can tell you from sure. I think I told you on this on the phone. I was invited a couple times to go to those, you know, the alderman's little rally that they had. And I was like, why are we going to this? We got better things to do, worry about in our community. Talking to someone that does a lot for the veteran community, he goes, I know, Charles. I know some of our veteran community is complaining about that too. Like, why are we being used as pawns for any politician? Because Ben Denali would tell you, I'm not a big fan of politicians, you know. I'm not. And I'm like, we're getting used by these conservative aldermen that really, that don't even want to give us a budget for the Chicago Veteran Affairs that was started by Harold Washington, by the way, which we probably would have had a budget if he didn't pass away. It's just like, I was just like, no, I'm not going to go to that. But I didn't know anything about this, to be honest, with this burning flag until I was watching the news. Cause I tend to tend not to watch the news that much. You know, it's always negative, but
yeah, I hear you.
I have PTSD, so everything. It's like always someone got killed today, or 30 children in Gaza, you know, got destroyed. But I can tell you this for that veteran, Ben. He went to city council, you know, the meeting, and he said that when he was there to try to speak, he said several people threatened him, the veteran. One of them was a veteran that kind of threatened him, which it offends me because nobody puts a hand on veteran. Nobody threatens another veteran. It's kind of like the mafia. You don't touch another veteran. That's just a no-no. You don't do that. You don't threaten another veteran. You talk to them, but you don't threaten them. So I just want to find out who that veteran is, because that's not good. You know, you don't threaten other veterans. He said the police were standing there, didn't do anything. But I was like, I was telling him, I was like, Zach, welcome to Chicago, man.
Did he speak at the city council meeting?
Well, they wouldn't let him speak. And he said one guy was following him around. And one of the guys was African-American guy that kept on saying to him, we're the only black people can burn the flag.
you know, and kind of threatening him. And then they let him speak, but not Cam speak. So he's like, which is kind of, he told me, which is odd, Charles. And I'm like, Cam, this is not Southern California. You got to understand, this is Chicago shit. Like, politics is the Super Bowl. Yeah. It's like the Super Bowl. These people live and die for politics. This is not, like, Southern California is all about movie stars, Hollywood, Ice Cube, you know, I don't know, you know. This is Chicago. This is what we have. Politics run with activism. That's one of the reasons he, I think, came here for like activism. Because we, you know, Chicago's known for activism. But I'm like, activism includes with politics, unfortunately.
Wow, what a great riff that was. I just have to say this, Cam, if you're listening, isn't it? This is a Charles thing to call him by his last name. Zachary, Cam, if you're listening. I'm reverse. I wish I lived in Southern California. I'd be hanging around the ocean, dreaming of surfing, which I do in Chicago anyway, dream of surfing, because I'm too old to surf. But it's whenever I hear anybody move to Chicago from Southern California, I always go, are you out of your mind?
What? Yeah, I know, man.
I want to go to California. Yeah, that was a great riff. All right, we're going to have to close it down because we've almost been talking an hour. I remember when I first reached out to Charles, I go, are you okay talking on the mic? And the man has passed the audition, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll have to have you come back and finish up parts of the conversation.
Absolutely. Can I just say one thing?
Go ahead.
I'm actually part of, just to let you know, since you're a big Harold Washington fan, mm-hmm. you know, I'm yeah. actually part of the Harold Washington American Legion post. Yeah. I'm 57th in state. Mm-hmm.
That's already my favorite post. Yeah. I had a conversation earlier today Ray had in the air. I urge everybody to check out that interview as well. That was a pretty wild interview or conversation. It wasn't even an interview. So he's an old school Chicago. He was brought up as a journalist. He's gone to the PR and, I was trying to get him to admit that Harold Washington was the greatest mayor of City of Chicago ever.
He ducked
and dodged, and he couldn't do it because, you know, they put that in your head that journalists, like that Mayor Daley's the greatest mayor of the City of Chicago. Yeah, so, okay. The journalists, they struggle with this. Oh, no, it's Daley. But, guys, you could let it go. Harold was the greatest. And, you know, it's not fair to Lori Lightfoot or Brandon Johnson.
He is the greatest, Ben. Greatest, man. He's the Michael Jordan. He's the Babe Ruth. He's, you know,
Did you ever see Mike Tyson interviewed with Ali? It's like the second time I've told this story. Are you a fight fan in any way? A boxing
fan? Yeah, I love boxing, but I never heard of that.
This is so good. This was in the 90s when Tyson was really young, and Ali, I think it's the second time on the mic. I apologize to the listeners for telling this story twice. Ali was there, and he's already beginning to lose his ability to speak, Charles. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Parkinson's. And, from the summer in the late 80s, early 90s, began to lose his ability to speak. He was asked, if you fought Tyson, who would win? And Ali, very honest man, he pointed to Tyson. He goes, he would have won. He punches too hard. And then they turned to Tyson and they asked him. And Tyson said, I'm a vain man. This is Tyson at his strongest, Charles. Young Mike Tyson. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Just visualize him. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a vain man. I know I'm great, but he pointed at Ali, is the GOAT. And I'm like, wow. Great. You know what I mean? And that's how it is with Harold Washington. He's the GOAT, Charles.
He is. He had swag. I mean, he had, I mean, he, man, watching old videos of him, like just at the council, man, he handled his business. He's the man. That's all I have to say.
That's it. So we agree on that. And old Ray Hanani at the end kind of sort of almost agreed with me. It hurt him, Charles, but he had to agree with me. All right, Charles, thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Hey, Ben, we got to bring Manny. Please bring him on. I would love to do it on a Veterans Day, or I love that, man. Please bring Manny.
So the Manny in question is the legendary Manny Weinkord, former coach of Roosevelt. And this is a whole other story.
Yes.
In a different lifetime. I wrote a very long reader story about the Roosevelt Rough Riders basketball.
Excellent team. Story, by the way, people. Excellent. Beautiful story. Hoop dreams before hoop dreams.
Yeah. And Charles, oh my God, that's a hilarious story. Charles started reading it on his phone, ladies and gentlemen. He goes,
I didn't know it was a novel. I was like, it was like 10 o'clock. And yeah. I'm like, it's like 2 o'clock. And I'm like, I need to go to work. I got to stop. I had to do it like each day for like an hour. It was an excellent article. It's a beautiful article. I was even I'm a Husky, and I was cheering for Roosevelt, in 1992 or whatever.
1992, Roosevelt Rough Riders in the city playoffs against Prosser High School. Or was it Steinmetz? At the moment, I can't remember which one it was. Anyway, neither here nor there. Read the story. I don't want to give anything away. And the Huskies that Charles is alluding to is Oak Park. His family moved to Oak Park when he was about entering high school. And so I will not hold it against him that he's an Oak Park Husky. I am an Evanston Wildcat. Those are kind of our rivals. But we put that aside, ladies and gentlemen, to talk for you today. All right? ancient rivalries to the side. Charles wasn't even a glimmer in his mom and dad's eyes when I was in high school.
But you got to bring Manny on. I would love to talk to Manny. Like Memorial Day, Veterans Day, please bring him on. He's exactly 50 years old. He was born the same day, and he's exactly 50 years older than me.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is fate.
32 and 82. All right, Charles, thank you very much. That's Charles Henderson. I'm Ben Drofsky. Take care, everybody.